This week, I catch up with Simon Finnegan and recall an infamous debut from the Super League era. Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Widnes Rugby Chat. It's been a difficult few weeks for Widnes Vikings on the pitch. A draw and two defeats to start the Championship season has put a lot of pressure on everybody at the club. I've caught up with Simon Finnegan, which you'll hear shortly, and asked him about what's going on with the team. He also gives an update on some of the injuries as well. Thanks, as always, to sponsors PD Law Solicitors, Whistle, Parklands FC and Arnold Gorse Financial Management. Also in this episode, I've caught up with former Widnes winger Justin Murphy, who had a 4 or 5 game loan spell back in 2004. I've always wanted to speak to him because I vividly remember him vomiting on the pitch on his debut at the Halton Stadium. So he's now coaching in France. I caught up with him too. But first, let's get straight into it and listen to what Simon Finnegan had to say about the past few weeks.
The stamp duty holiday is being extended on all properties until the end of June. So if you're thinking of moving house, make sure you instruct your local solicitors, PD Law, for all your conveyancing needs.
Simon, I want to take you back to 70th minute at Newcastle, 14 points ahead. And you must have thought, getting off to a fairly solid start in the league, where's it sort of gone wrong since that moment?
There's a load of different reasons and different factors, and it's not difficult to tell you them, but it's difficult to say them without them coming across as an excuse. So we have different reasons, obviously, but certainly, and we spoke before, and everyone I've spoke to, I'd never use any of them as an excuse, because I think the players we've had on the field and things we're doing, we should still get results. So I think there is circumstances to why possibly some things have happened, but the simple thing is that overrides all them possible excuses is we're not putting enough into games. And I've said that for a couple of weeks, that you get what you deserve, and how much you put in doesn't give you any right to win a game, but it certainly goes a long way to helping you get a result. And we're not putting enough into games to earn the right to try and get a result at the moment. So that, going back to the 70th minute, in that last 10 minutes, we didn't put enough and we got burnt, and we have been since. We're not putting enough into games in the right areas, whether that's defensively, respecting the ball. That's what I'm saying. When I'm saying not putting enough into the right areas, there's a couple of things, how you want to defend and how much you respect the ball. And we're not doing that consistently enough to give us a chance to be in a game or to win a game.
Yeah, the circumstances you mentioned, are they off-field things? Is it injuries? You know, what sort of, you can't tell us specifically.
I can, but when you start reeling them off, then it becomes the main issue instead of it almost becomes an excuse. And I don't want it to become, because it's not an excuse, but there are factors that go into that. I mean, we've had, our injury list isn't great. We every week we pick up injuries. We've got obviously some long-term injuries to key people, which have played a part with the fluency of the team every week. Our rotation, certainly within our forwards, has been affected by that. That's clear to see. So the COVID hasn't helped, but all these things are happening to everyone. It just seems to be happening to us a little bit more at this stage. But again, I hate using them things as a reason why, because it's not. It obviously plays its part, but it hasn't really helped us at the start of the season to get any fluency and get any consistency within our selection and training. But yeah, they're certainly there in the background. But again, I really want to emphasize, they're not excuses. They're playing a part, but the main factor of what I said is the main reason, because whoever we've played, if we put them areas or that effort in the right type of areas, and it's not just about effort, it's controlling the ball and them type of things, we might not have won these games either, but we certainly would have been in a chance of winning, given us ourselves a chance of winning these games regardless of all them other issues. So that's a thing that we need to be better at, certainly.
In terms of the fitness side, obviously you've got injuries, but are you a little bit concerned that the players in general aren't as fit as they ought to be? you know, is that a concern? You know, like, you know, the Battley game, for instance, 20 minutes looked okay, but then seemed to get tired pretty quickly after that. And whose responsibility is it to address that?
I haven't got any issues with how fit we are. I think the other issues that I've said are contributing to our fitness levels because, one, if you don't hold the ball, you do more defence. And then when you do more defence, you become more fatigued. We're not holding the ball anywhere near the amount that you need to. I know, for example, our completion rate was 50% against Dewsbury, which that's not even close to good enough. So your fitness levels will get judged, or of course they should, but our fitness levels are getting tested more than they should because we're not holding the ball. So we're having to do more defence than we should have to. If you hold the ball more, we'd have more energy. So I haven't got an issue with our actual fitness. Our issue around the other things are affecting our fitness, and that's clear. I know, like, and it's easy to say that we don't look fit enough, but that's not the case. It's what we're doing with other parts of the game that are affecting our energy levels, and how you do them parts of the game has a knock-on effect to all those things.
Is confidence an issue? I mean, I think you said it in your interview with the club after the game, the manner of that try, I can't remember whether it was the try that made it 22-16, where it was sort of the first receiver off a set play and he just basically ran under the sticks with nobody touching him. I mean, that, I think you alluded again in your interview about you knew when that happened that something wasn't right. Is that a confidence thing? Is it an attitude thing? What do you think it is?
It's an attitude thing. It's not a confidence thing because we know that's an attitude thing. And some of the tries are attitude things because we knew that what was coming in, and to fix that is an attitude thing and a concentration thing. So, yeah, there's certainly a lack of confidence, but that lack of confidence is because we're not winning. That's obviously going to have a knock-on effect as well. But I think that's not, you know, the lack of confidence isn't about conceding tries. There might be some areas where with the ball we might lack a little bit of confidence or things like that, but that's certainly an attitude thing. Some of the tries that we can see are definitely an attitude thing.
The Salford game, the first half, I can't remember, we haven't had like a lengthy chat since then, but you must have been pretty encouraged by the first half performance against Salford. But do you sort of feel like you've gone backwards from that first half? You've defended fairly well. I know they had a couple of tries in quick succession, but the attack particularly looked, you know, pretty dynamic and, you know, pretty open. But we've maybe not seen as much of that in the last two games.
Yeah, and you're right, that was probably, which is obviously very strange to say considering the scoreline, in terms of our attack fluency, was our probably as pleased as I've been this season, you know, as where we're at. I think we attack quite well. But this will go back to, we haven't had the same players playing every week, which is affecting our attack. But again, the main issue is around, it's hard to get attack fluency if you don't hold the ball. So the Salford game, we hold the ball better and we had more opportunities to attack because we hold the ball. The Dewsbury game, we're holding the ball 50% of the time. So then when you do get the ball in key areas, you're trying to force it because you haven't held it long enough. So your attack becomes frantic and not controlled because you feel and the players feel that we're not holding the ball long enough, so we have to do something that play. So that has a knock-on effect. But there's reasons that our attack isn't where it should be, and ball control is one. And certainly the chop and changing in the players hasn't helped in that regard. That's where it's not an excuse, but that's a factor. I mean, anyone that knows the game knows you need some fluency and players playing together to get that flow and attack. So that's not a huge worry for mine because I know once we get that and we hold the ball a bit better, we will get better at attack. But the issues around the effort areas with controlling a ball and other things off the ball is where we need to fix.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, your 6 and 7 have been fairly settled, but certainly 1, 9, 30 and the other sort of key positions in the middle, you've had to chop and change quite a bit. I know you've had Brad O'Neill sort of trying to fill that gap at hooker. I mean, he's probably not an orthodox run-of-the-mill hooker. He's more of a deputising hooker, isn't he, in many ways.
Is there any movement on Logan Tompkins? Is he looking any closer to getting back, or is it still a long way off that one?
It's not a long way off. He's at his next stage of progression, where he's starting to put some load through the foot, which again, hopefully he's going to start running soon and doing some stuff. So, but that's the next part of his rehab is the important part, because that's where there could be setbacks, because he's starting to put more load through. So that's where no one's really sure what comes next, because like I say, he's starting to put a little bit more load up his rehab, which then, touch wood, you don't get any setbacks, but this is the area where you possibly could get delayed. But you say we've got our halfbacks have played every game, but it's not always just about the halfbacks playing when the middles are changing all the time, and we've got makeshift middles and different people are changing. I know we've had centers in and out, different wingers, and it's the six and seven are a constant, but the bodies inside and outside them are different. So, and that again presents different challenges to them, because everyone's slightly different in how we play, and they're learning still how we play and different things like that. So even though the six and seven have been constant, there is a lot of change around them, which does have a knock on to our attack. So, and as you said, Brad's still a kid as well. So he's a nine, but he's learning the game as well. So we're never going to get a polished performance every week from him or during a game. You know, he's still learning the game. So there's certain things that aren't helping, but you know, that's, again, it's not an excuse. I'm really careful, and I don't want to make it sound like it is, because it's not from my side. I'm not using any of these things as a reason why.
You've obviously brought in the three lads on loan. Has there been any talk about permanent signings? Is that available to you at the moment, or is that not something that's possible because of finances?
Well, it's not because of finances. I think at the start, before I joined this season, we were close to being signed and where we were in terms of spend and things like that. So we've got a squad of 28. These people are coming in on loan. So it's not something that we need to go and look at and just bring people in. I think that's the wrong thing to do anyway. Just if things aren't working, let's go and bring people in. You know, it's the recruitment was done before I got here, and it was already, that season was, even though it wasn't sort of started, it was still, the season continued from the season through from COVID. So it's not, we can't go and sign five or six players. That's just not going to happen. So I think we've got to work with what we've got. And again, whether the money's there or not, no club's got a load of money to just go and bring three or four players in at the start of every season, have they? I mean, the recruitment was done beforehand. So we'll try and pick up where we can, loans and things like that. But the market's really difficult anyway. I mean, unless you've got a load of money, which no club has, you can't just go out and sign a load of players, can you? That's just not how our sports run, for one.
Yeah, the player market does seem really, not dead, but really, really stiff at the moment, where like you almost, you know, even, you know, I look at it and I think, is there any players that Widnes could sign? And even for, you know, even trying to get young lads on loan from Super League, it seems very difficult to identify players who you think you might be able to bring in.
Well, it's an odd one, because Super League clubs, and I think the dual reg thing was right, how they've changed it. I can't say I'm a big fan of dual reg anyway. I'll be honest. I don't think it's right. But a lot of clubs are nervous, Super League clubs, and rightly so, because of COVID. But you just don't know what's around the corner. I mean, we've already lost two already this season that missed three games and two games. I know Batley on the weekend lost a player the week leading into the game. He wasn't in the squad, but you know, Super League clubs are the same. You just can't afford to let players go out on loan that possibly around the week that goes by, you might need them. And the 2 week loan window again is helpful, but it's as helpful as it is unhelpful, because clubs on both sides of it are reluctant to let team players go. But then some clubs are, you're paying over odds, you know, sometimes for 2 week loans. So it's a really difficult market just to go out and get someone, and finding the right player that might fit in for 2 week loan, which it is at the moment, isn't as easy as it as it looks as well, it's, you know, there is a lot of players that possibly could come in, but are they the right fit for 2 weeks? Ellis Robson's a really good example for us because he's been at the club before. Everyone knows what he's about. Everyone speaks really highly of him. And he come in before, he's been in, you know, in different circumstances, and he comes in and performs every time he comes in. So it's a no-brainer because you know what you're going to get. So that's not the same for every club, and certainly not the same for every player. You're always taking that risk anyway with loan players, and it's a difficult one to get right. So you've got to get the right player and do your homework. And then there's a load of other factors like finance and different things that go into it. So it's a difficult market at the moment. And I'm not sure we're at that stage where I want to just keep bringing people in because I just don't think it's right either.
Yeah. And I suppose it's worth pointing out as well that you have to bring them in on the 2 week loan initially, don't you? Like what you've done with Uribe, you know, he's coming for 2 weeks and then you can extend it beyond that. Do you anticipate that sort of might happen with Brad O'Neill and with Ellis Robson? Is that what you're hoping will happen with them too?
Yeah. And again, we're dictated to by their club, aren't we? You know, all the best intentions that we have, at the end of the day, they're not our players. So at any given moment, that could change. So they're the thoughts, obviously, around that. But again, it's hard for me to say that I want to do that because they're not my players. You know, things can change really quickly. But I think the three that have come in have been excellent. To be fair, I think they've all come in, and you can tell that they're putting the effort in, and they're really trying their best, and they're contributing, which is the main thing. So if things work out how we want them to, yeah, they would stay with us for until they call back. But again, that's not my decision. So
yeah,
I just take that week by week.
Did Ellis go to hospital with the eye injury that he got? I know he was patched up and was thinking about getting it checked after the game.
No, he just got some other eye drops and that through the doctor when he got back. And to be fair to him, he tried to play through it, but he couldn't see. So it was a shame because I thought he was going really well. But he's, you know, it's one of them things that probably looks like it's not a lot to it, but when you can't see and he's looking out of one eye, it's, you know, he can't stay on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I dare say his tackling in the middle would probably made a bit of a difference in that second part. Did you see the incident when it happened? Did you feel like there was a deliberate? It was deliberate from the Batley player?
I've watched it back and I can't. At the time, I didn't think there was anything in it. And the view I've got, it doesn't look like there is, but I don't think there was, to be honest. I think it's just one of them that catches him the wrong way. And then, you know, it's there's not a lot in it, but it's end up costing him going back on the field. It's just one of them ones that he was really frustrated, to be fair. He's apologised, thinking he's let people down, but as I say, he can't see, so he's not let anyone down. He's tried to play on, but he can't.
Well, I mean, he's actually played more games for Widnes now than he has for Warrington, actually, in his career. So it was James Brown, wasn't it? I think he was involved in that tackle, and I think he put on it was a legitimate shot on Lloyd Robey. He was a third man in, wasn't he? It looked like a painful one for Lloyd Robey, but I think both James Brown and Michael Ward made a difference for Batley off the bench. Is the problem that we've got that Widnes just simply haven't got that seasoned, toughened, part-time rugby player yet, and it's going to take a few years to get some of the current players up to that sort of level? You know, I'm talking like a lot of these lads have come from full-time academy. They've never really had to be part-time players, whereas some of these Yorkshire clubs and the players at Yorkshire clubs are just like really tough men who, you know, just played part-time rugby the whole career and they know what it's about.
And I've said this, I think, I'm not sure when we spoke initially, that the championship players, some of these guys, like you said, have been playing it a long time. The championship's tough. It's a tough league. And it's not so much that they need to get seasoned to it, but some of these guys are good rugby players in their own right, and they know how to play the game, and they've been doing it for that long, working and playing, and that they shouldn't be underestimated in what they can do. So I think we're as a club, I still think we're trying to find our way in the Championship, if I'm honest. I don't think we've fully adapted to probably where we're at and what else is around us. It's the Championship is, no one's got any given right to be where you are, whether your name's Widnes Vikings, Bradford Bulls, whoever it is. It's like you use them two examples of them players, but every team's littered with players like that have been playing a game a long time, and they're good Championship clubs and good Championship players. So I think a lot of clubs and play, well, you use the players for example. I think the clubs that sometimes drop down, it takes them a while to adapt to the surroundings and get an idea of, one, where they're at as a club and what the surroundings are like, because there's no given right for anyone where you're at. And I think I wouldn't use players, but I think the club, certainly, I think we're learning where we're at and where we need to be and what it'll take to get there. But that takes time as well. And it might sound like I want the time or things like that, but I think it does take time to realise your surroundings and where you're at in the food chain and what everyone else is like, because it isn't easy. There's a lot of good teams and they've been doing this a long time at this level, so that there's no easy way back out, and you've got to learn that, and it takes time.
There's obviously a bit of hysteria amongst the fan base after the last two performances. Has there been any conversation between you and the board about progress and where things are, or has it just been a case of they know the situation and it's carry on from there?
I'm in communication with the board all the time. I speak with Phil and Chris and board members. There's ongoing conversations about where we're at, where we see the future, what all the things that excuse me, that you speak about. So we all know where we're at and we all know where we want to get to and where we've been through and how we've got back to where we are. So it's not that there's nothing that we keep secret from each other, and we're all on the same page of where we need, what, how we need to fix it and what we're going to do to fix it. So them conversations are ongoing all the time. I've got a really good relationship with all the board and they've been really helpful to me since the minute I've come through, and I have ongoing conversations. A little bit more difficult because we don't have as many face-to-face like we should, but that's hard because we're in red and amber zones on game days and things like that, which you obviously know, you witness it. It's not something that's easy, but I'm in constant conversations with them all. And as I say, we've got a great relationship.
You know, because obviously the fans, and is it important that the fans understand that it is, there needs to be a little bit of patience, but then at the same time, and we sort of spoke about this before, how important do you think it is to get the fans back to almost lift the players up, especially when they're down on confidence?
Oh, it's massive. But I also understand how fans think, that they obviously they'll understand it to a degree and they'll see that it takes time, but they also want to see effort. They want to see results. They want to see wins. That's, I know that. I'm aware of that, even though I'm unaware of things that get said because I'm not on any of their platforms, but I'm not stupid. I'm aware of that. They want some want immediate results, but they also want to see progress. So, as we've spoke about, I would love them back. And even though we're not particularly playing great at the moment, results certainly haven't gone our way, I want them in the stadium because I feel that we need that. I feel that we, and whether that's sometimes some groans and some things that are negative, I still think we need that because that can spur some players on. It'll get them the kick at times that they probably need. And also sometimes you get them when the crowd can sense that they need a lift as well, that, you know, we get that cheer or that they get on their back and try and give them a lift because they give you that. So I think we're missing that. Certainly. I really do think we are missing that for all them reasons I've just said. I think they'll give us the kick that we need. And I also think they'll give us the lift when we need it as well, because they always do that. So I can't wait for that Whitehaven game, you know, that first game back. So, because I like that as well. I like hearing the cheer. I also don't mind hearing some negative stuff, because again, it gives you a little bit of fire to prove people wrong, and you want to hear it because they're passionate. They got every right to say and feel how they feel because they love the club as much as everyone at the club. So everyone's got their opinion and everyone's got the right to voice that however they want. But I want them in the stadium doing that because they're there, and what they say and do there is their own choice, but I still want to hear it.
Yeah. Do you feel now that the next 2 weeks or so are massively important? I know every week's important, but you've almost got to the point where the Swinton game's a must win, but then you've got this week off, I guess, because the Toulouse game probably won't be happening. Is this probably just what you need at the moment? Maybe if you can get a win against Swinton and then have an extra bit of training maybe and try and get the players firing back to where they need to be ahead of the York game?
Possibly, but I also want to... Obviously, we want to win. That's we're sportsmen. I want to win. But I also want us to win by doing all the things that we need to get better at. I want... Because I think that will help, because then if we... when we win that game and we're doing the things that we need to be better at, then it won't just be a win and then we go back into a loss. It'll be a win and then we'll win the next game and then we'll win the next game because we're doing the things that win you games or put you in the position to win games. So that's as much as I want to win, I want to win that way as well, because then I know going into the next week, we'll be in a good shape and we'll go on, we could go on a run. So a win's important, but how we win as is important, because I think that will kick us on as well. So that's what I want. And obviously a weekend off, if we get one here and there, would be nice, but that's part. I'm only looking at tomorrow night's training and then what we do on Wednesday and then what we do on Friday and then the game day. We'll worry about that when we get to it.
In terms of some of the players that have been missing recently, you know, Jake Spedding sat out a few. Has he got a knock? Is he any closer to getting back, or...?
I think he's probably not going to be quite ready for the next game, possibly the one after that. Callum, I think as long as he continues to pass his head protocols, he should be available. Jack Owens will be probably 50-50, so, you know, that's obviously a plus. And then until I get the full check about yesterday, because we had some knocks yesterday, like obviously Lloyd got injured, we had a couple of people with some tightness, so I'll know more tomorrow. But the likelihood is, like most weeks, we've probably lost a couple and gained a couple, but that's where we're at the moment, so that's nothing new to us.
Where are Matt Cook and Lee Jewett at in terms of their fitness? Because clearly having their experience in the team, you know, is crucial.
Yeah, Lee Jewett possibly available this week. He played a couple of back-to-back games that have set him back a little bit. So he might be available this week. Cookie's probably a couple of weeks off. So, as you say, yeah, that would help. And that, again, that's getting a bit of fluency back. But, yeah, we get two back and we lose two at the moment. But that's the way it is.
Was Cook's the one that happened at Newcastle?
Yeah.
Is it like a lower back or something like that?
He had a back spasm and it took a little bit longer to settle. So he started running this week, but again, that how he responds to that running and then he can up it, then we'll know. But it's very unlikely he'll be fit for this game.
In terms of the training, you know, clearly it's a different environment to a full time environment. What do you do what do you focus on in the sessions? Do you focus on your ball playing more and sort of the fitness level, if you like, is left to the players to do at their own device? Just give us a bit of insight in how it all works.
Well, we normally sit down, myself and Ryan will sit down on a Monday and discuss obviously the game and what if we need to really focus on anything that needs fixing up while we're still looking at the team that was coming up. So it's sort of a cross between them both. If we need any fix up from the weekend and what we possibly might need to fix going forward. And then sometimes what teams might throw at us, things like that. So it's a mixture between the both and how we work the week from that. But then also our injury and numbers we have on the field has an impact on some things that we can do. Obviously, if you've only got a certain amount of training, you can only do a certain amount of things. So that has that plays its part as well. But that's pretty much how we base most weeks. We look at things that we might need to fix, things that we need to certainly need to work on, and then take it from there.
Widnes are, of course, next in action on Sunday against Swinton. That's May the 2nd, depending on when you're listening to this. I do believe that the Toulouse game we had anticipated will be called off, but I do believe that there's potential that that game may well get played now, but possibly in the UK. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that one. And then the game against York is on May the 16th. And the first game that fans will be back will be on May the 23rd at home to Whitehaven. So something a bit different in this podcast. I'm trying to catch up with as many people as possible to give a bit of variety to the podcast. And on this week's show, I speak to former winger Justin Murphy, who came over to play under Frank Endicott and Stuart Spruce at the end of 2004, played in the wins against Huddersfield and Wigan, which were crucial in helping Widnes stay up that year. Murphy went on to then play for Catalan Dragons in Super League. He was actually Super League's top try scorer in 2006. I wanted to ask him what he remembers about his brief spell at Widnes, how it came about, and if he remembers that infamous incident on the pitch. Hope you enjoy this one.
So Justin, just tell me a little bit about how you ended up coming over to Europe first and foremost. I think it was 2004 that you signed for Widnes.
Yeah, at the end of 2004, I was at the Warriors, and the Warriors didn't have a very good season. They were changing and that. And then at the beginning, they were going to keep me. I was going to stay there. I was happy to stay in New Zealand. But at the end, they ended up going a different way. And so I decided to explore my options as well. And then I got offered to, before the NRL season had finished, because I wasn't in the Warriors' plans, I got offered the opportunity to play in a Rugby Union 7 side at Twickenham for a New Zealand Invitational side. And I'd never been to England before. And I always wanted to travel to Europe and have a look around. So I thought it was a great opportunity to come over and have a look around and play some rugby as well, which rugby sevens, I'd never played that before. So I accepted the challenge and came over to play in the tournament. And then when I got to London, I had a few phone calls. I think I had a good friend playing at Castlewood, Mark Tookie. So I'd arranged to go and stay with him after the sevens tournament in London. But then I had a few clubs inquire about what I was up to and if I was available as well. So there was a bit of interest. And then Widnes ended up showing the most interest, and they were in a bit of a difficult situation that season as well. So I thought it would be a great opportunity for myself to stay a bit longer and play some sport in England. And I'd always loved the English style of rugby league as well, with the old grounds and the crowds, and was something I always wanted to experience. And then,
yeah, I mean, to be honest, we'll talk, and I think you know what I'm probably going to ask you about. But of all the players, I remember your debut quite well. And to be honest, thinking back, when I was looking back through your stats and stuff, I thought you played a lot more games. I mean, you only played 5 games for Widnes, but I always remember your debut because for you throwing up on the pitch in the second half. Because you did, I remember you putting yourself about quite a bit, and I think you scored a try and stuff like that. But just tell us about that. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember it. I remember it well, actually, because I'd spent a few days at Tux's house in Castleford on holiday before I sorted everything out with Widnes. So I'd had a few days off. I was doing my own training, but it's not the same, obviously, as a team training. And then once I'd signed with Widnes, I didn't have a visa to stay in England. So I had to leave England to get a visa.
Right.
So Widnes had organised, I think Andrew Kirchin was the one, a member of parliament up there or someone high, they had arranged for me to go to the embassy in Dublin. So I ended up flying to Ireland, staying in Dublin for a week by myself. I was there for 5 days. I thought I'd just go there and rock up and get the visa straight away, but... That's not the process, obviously, of an embassy and visa. So I had to wait there by myself. So I checked into a 20 euro a night backpack hostel. And I think in my room, there was a room of 8, and there was like 2 Russian guys didn't speak a word of English. There was other foreign people there. And yeah, it was a That was another experience. So I was there in this hostel for a week, and then obviously training and waiting, I was by myself again. The training is not the same. And then when I got to witness after the visa got approved, I think on the over the weekend, might have got approved on the weekend. I arrived there and had a couple of days training and was straight into the game. So I was a little bit underdone, but I was very enthusiastic. And I got a try early on. It was against Huddersfield, and then Matt Whittaker, he was playing. He got two tries that game, and that was against his club that let him go that year. And I remember him coming over and showing the coach his name on the back because he had a very good game and showed him that they probably should have kept him.
Yeah, I always remember Matt Whittaker because he was really good in 2004 when he was on loan. And then he was almost completely different when he'd signed the following year. And you know, you sort of get that sometimes in players when they're playing to prove a point, they sort of, or playing for a contract, they can just go to another level that maybe they can't always find. But I really liked Whittaker that season.
Motivation. We had some good guys because, the last five games, it was really in the relegation battle there. And that first game, we played Huddersfield and we won that game. So that was an important game to come into and win. But I remember throwing up. It was about 60 minutes, 65 minutes, and I was gone. I was throwing up on the sideline and I was just shattered.
Had you ever gone through anything like that before? Or
I do. I vomit a lot after I put I was always a sprinter, a fast runner, 200 metres. And I remember even since I was little, every time I finished a 200-metre race, I'd vomit after the race. So it's something that it was a bit of a habit for me, vomiting after efforts. But
yeah, I mean, it perhaps wouldn't go down so well now with the artificial pitch. they'd probably have a harder time clearing it off.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't like to be tackled there after it.
Yeah, I mean, you started pretty well, to be honest. You got that win against Huddersfield, and then the following week, I don't know if you remember, there's the win against Wigan, you know, a home win.
I remember Wigan very well because Wigan had Andy Farrell. They had a very good team. Gary Connolly, Radlinski, Brett Dallas was playing. They had Adrian Lamb, Terry O'Connor. They had a very good team, and Wigan was a team as a young Australian kid. You always look to England, and Wigan were the top team. So it was a very good game and a home game for us with a good crowd. And it was another important win, two wins straight away. So it was a good, and we had Frank Endicott who was coaching us too. And I was living with Frank as well. So he was an ex-Wigan coach as well. So it was a big game for us as a club and for Widnes to stay in Super League at that stage as well.
What's it like coming over as like an Australian or, you know, whatever, and into that relegation sort of dogfight where, you know, because clearly you don't experience that over, you know, back home?
Yeah, it's funny. You're in a relegation battle and you're winning games, and every game you win, it was like a grand final for us. So the crowds would be excited for us. The supporters of Widnes were passionate and they'd be right behind us. And after a win, it was like a massive finals and game, and it was really appreciative of the support for the team at that stage, and it did help Widnes survive that year as well.
Do you remember the Casford game? Because it was between Widnes and Casford for the bottom, and I think I remember it was a Saturday night, and it was torrential rain the whole night.
It was terrible weather, yeah.
And Widnes lost 7-6. And was that? Do you remember? Was that a feeling that did you all feel after that game that maybe, you know, you would go down? Or because obviously that was at that time, it felt like that maybe was what was going to happen.
Yeah, Castleford game, it was terrible conditions, raining, and two teams desperate to try and win a game, and to put in the effort and then not win, to lose by 1 point, it was pretty devastating at that stage, and we were still pretty unknown if we were going to stay, if Widnes would stay in the Super League. So it was hard times, yeah.
Yeah, and you went into the last game, and I think it was at Hull, wasn't it, the last game? And I think Casford needed a result against Wakefield, but it became pretty clear they got battered, I think, by, it might have been Wakefield even, they were playing. What's it like being on the pitch when you sort of...
It's funny, you
trying to think about what's happening elsewhere, and then you're trying to get your job done, and...
Yeah, it was out of our hands at that stage. And then the call came over that Castleford had lost and that we're going to stay in the Super League. So it's
I know we're professional players at that stage, but it's a bit disturbing and disturbs the preparation, obviously. And we didn't play well that game as well against Hull, but we were secured in Super League. So,
was there any discussions about staying at Widnes? I think you went to France, did you, pretty much straight away?
Yeah, I'd been speaking with the UTC at that stage before I'd sort of come to England, but because I was living with Frank Endicott, I was talking to him and their quota spots. They were unsure of how they were going to use the quota spots, obviously. And then he ended up signing Owen Craigie, and I think Owen Craigie took the last quota spot. So there was ended up no room for me to stay at Widnes anyway. So there was no possibilities. But yeah, I did really enjoy the time I was there. They're nice people. I still keep in contact with a lot of the players from there now. So it was a great experience for me personally. And then, yeah, it would have been good to contribute more at Widnes if I could have, only 5 games. But I am proud that I contributed to stay in Super League that year as well.
Thanks, as always, to sponsors PD Law Solicitors, Arnold Gore's Financial Management, Whistle and Parklands FC. If you've got any comments, feedback or suggestions, please do give me a tweet at JDG Sport or do leave me a message on the Widnes Rugby website and forum. Always up for ideas for interviews. I know someone suggested if I can get hold of Neil Kelly, that would be one they'd like to hear. But if you've got any specifics, I'll try and my best to get hold of the appropriate people. Please do, as I say, leave any comments and reviews, especially on iTunes and Spotify, wherever it is you listen to the podcast. And I'll be back to record another episode in 2 weeks' time.